Good morning, everyone. Today we're going to continue to explore the Mountains and Water Sutra by Ehe Dogen. Last night, Mike said in his talk that we must keep on investigating, keep inquiring. And I think that Dogen is constantly in his writings offering us the model of how to go about doing that. And he writes so beautifully, his flowing metaphors and inscrutable connections. When I read it, I feel as though I'm swept away into Dogen's universe. And it makes me wonder, what about our universe? What about this everyday one that we inhabit, that is so full of trouble, especially it seems these days? How does Dogen's writing illuminate what we are up against? Dogen will often take a phrase or a statement, a sentence from a koan or something that he's heard another teacher say, and he'll begin to examine it, often word by word. And he does this in order to uncover any assumptions that there might be about the meaning of each word. He makes this very careful examination of how his own mind makes defines things, and asks, "Is that really the way it is?" And he turns things around to see if their opposite might also be true. Turns them upside down every which way, and we go with him. It can be quite disorienting, and I think that's the point. Because one thing that we must do if we are going to examine and respond to the difficulties in our world is to be sure that we're not already blinded by the assumptions that we make about ourselves, about the things around us, about how and why things occur. So let us take Dogen's example to heart. I want to start partway in on a section about mountains. I'll be looking at mountains today. Turning circumstances and turning mind is rejected by the great sage. Speaking of mind and speaking of essence is not agreeable to Buddha ancestors. Seeing into mind and seeing into essence is the activity of people outside the way. Confined words and phrases do not lead to liberation. So he gives these examples of the ways that we divide things, in this case, mind and essence. But it can apply to anything. I think more immediately of simply good and evil. How we want to nail it down and to say this is good and that's evil, and then we know which way we should move. And Dogen says that speaking of such opposites is not our way. It's the activity of people outside the way, that these are confined words and phrases that do not lead to liberation. And so what does he suggest instead? So, in thinking about this, I recognize that I have a way of approaching the world that is my personal way, and my views are from my particular point of view. As Mike read to us last night, the bamboo pole aimed at the sky. I can only ever really see from my point of view what's inside that bamboo pole's circumference. But if we are to act from a place that is not just bound by personal opinion, then we must have the mind of the universe. We must be able to see all of the sky. How do we do that? Dogen goes on. There is something free from all of these views. That is, green mountains are always walking, and eastern mountains travel on water. Study this in detail. So he leaps free of this and that, of good and evil, and he brings us right to the matter at this moment. What is it right now? Before we add on any of our opinions or whatever, can we start there? Green mountains are always walking. Eastern mountains travel on water. We don't even know how to take hold of that. He goes on. Yun Men said, "Eastern mountains travel on water." The meaning of these words brought forth that all mountains are eastern mountains, and all eastern mountains travel on water. So, all mountains are eastern mountains. And we, James yesterday gave us a few hints about these mountains that are all mountains traveling on water. About one that was strapped into a child car seat, and one who is now old enough to drive. Who are these eastern mountains? What are all the mountains? So let us not confine our minds to our own personal views. Let us use the universal mind to look at this, to include everything as all mountains, regardless whether it's shaped like a mountain or not. Then Dogen goes on a bit of a rant. He does this periodically. He has some pretty strong feelings about what other teachers have said, and he's not afraid to voice them. But we're going to skip over that part and come to this next section that I find particularly intriguing. Know that eastern mountains travel on water is the bones and marrow of the Buddha ancestors. She's pointing to something very important here. This matter of mountains and water. So Dogen can be very challenging to read because he switches back and forth so much, it's hard for the mind to follow. And that is indeed, I think, intentionally so. I imagine him, or the way that he writes, as, well, he's trying to juxtapose things that seem like two different things to us. And yet are not really. They are and they aren't. And how to express that? So I imagine him having a card with like mountains on one side and waters on the other side. And, or you might say form on one side and emptiness on the other side. And that he starts to switch the card back and forth very quickly. And he goes faster and faster and faster so that through the trick of the eye, we see them both at once. But he doesn't have a card to do this. He only has words. And so we get passages like this, which is toward the end of this sutra. An ancient Buddha said, "Mountains are mountains, waters are waters." These words do not mean mountains are mountains. They mean mountains are mountains. He's trying his best. Can we follow along? And it's so essential that we do, not to be stuck in that bamboo pole, but to have the mind of the universe, to tackle issues of the universe, to respond to issues of the universe. So he says, know that eastern mountains travel on water is the bones and marrow of the Buddha ancestors. These mountains, this water, form emptiness. Things that seem so solid, things that seem to have no fixed shape at all. Back and forth the card goes, back and forth. All waters appear at the foot of the eastern mountains. So here I imagine, this is totally my imagining, Dogen looking out his office window or whatever he had. And I imagine that he lived in the mountains, but I don't know that. Seeing how his inner state, how all that he has come to meet through his zazen is reflected and projected in the world around him. And so these great mountains reaching up to the sky and water at their base, always moving. All waters appear at the foot of the eastern mountains, and accordingly all mountains ride on clouds and walk in the sky. So if the foot of the mountains is this water, this ever-moving, always changing, shaping stuff that we can't even take hold of, and yet out of this mountains arise. What is the base of the mountains? There's nothing solid there. Always moving, always changing. Eastern mountains traveling on water. And riding on clouds and walking in the sky. Such freedom. Not based on anything solid. No abode. No place to rest. Or we might say, resting everywhere. So which mountains is Dogen talking about? It's none other than each of us. It's none other than everything around us and all of the universe. What a challenge to open up enough to accept all of that. He continues, all mountains are the tops of the heads of all waters. So the mountains floating around in this water, the tops, just the tops sticking out. And this is so expresses for me my own experience of doing zazen in this limitless world that opens up in looking inward, in taking that backward step. And how coming forward again, something shows up. And it's recognized as really just the tip of this limitlessness that exists. The universe beyond even the universe. And Dogen gives us this vivid picture of it. All mountains are the tops of the heads of all waters. He continues, walking beyond and walking within are both done on water. So my experience, again, of this practice is that somehow it's true for me, and I continue to examine this because Mike has exhorted us to do this, but somehow for me it's true that that things move originally in this water, in this boundless place, and that somehow that movement comes forth in some manifestation in the tips of the mountains, in this place that we see and hear and move around in. That there is movement, and then that it comes forth. The movement in the dark, right? It's inscrutable. I don't know how it happens. I don't know. I know I'm not doing it. And yet something moves and shifts. And it manifests in our world in some way. all mountains. Oh, sorry. Walking beyond and walking within are both done on water. So even though we want to separate this out into, well, this thing happens in water and this thing happens in the mountains, they are not separate. The card must move very fast to catch up on that one, because so much we want to separate it out. And our minds really can't hold both at once. So back and forth we go, back and forth. But to recognize that the truth is neither this nor that, that it requires us to leap free of those old ways of thinking, of those assumptions, the ways that work so well for us in the day-to-day, everyday world. This is essential. This is vital in our acting in the world. And Dogen addresses this as well. He says, "All mountains walk with their toes on waters and make them splash." It's wonderfully playful, isn't it? I love that he does that. And here is this meeting of mountains and waters, this place where they meet, and the toes splash. There's an action. Something happens. And what I especially enjoy about it, what makes it so playful, is that the mountains and the waters coming together don't know where the splash will go. There's no control over that. We make the splash and the droplets fall where they will. And we see that and we make another splash. We don't get to control the results. We just notice a need and splash our toes. This is the function of practice realization. It cannot be separated, even though it expresses in two different ways. We practice and we notice a need and we respond, realizing our response in this world. And this is our essential task. We inquire and we respond. Inquire and respond, not getting stuck anywhere, leaping free. "Thus, in walking, there are 7 vertical paths and 8 horizontal paths." This is practice realization. So I read this 7 vertical paths and 8 horizontal paths as leading everywhere. There is nowhere that isn't touched. This traveling of the mountains, this flowing of the water, this splashing of the toes, the droplets reach everywhere. This is the functioning of the universe as us and us as the universe. Now, David pointed out to me just before we came here that I was using an older translation. And so, with apologies for any mistakes made by reading what is superseded words, we ask David now to clear it up for us. Thank you.
Yeah, so to clarify what Kate was saying, have the image that we've just been on a kayak trip. We're following Kate, fearless Kate, paddling from island to island, saying, "Look at this, and look at this, and look at this. How wonderful this journey." I had questioned Kate a little bit about her kayak trip and paddling off the coast of Maine, because the tides are quite big, 20 feet. The water rises, the great ocean rises, the great water climbs the mountain twice a day, and then the mountain, the water recedes. Traveling back down the mountain, this great breathing of the earth, breathing of the waters of life, that we are a part of this breathing. The greatest delusion of human beings is that we are separate. These wonderful minds we have, and we should be ever grateful for these troublesome organs that cause us so much suffering, but we can, from the inside, we look out, and it's clear there are two categories. This basic category: there is me, and there is everything else. I'm in here, and the mountains are out there. This is such a basic assumption of the mind, of consciousness, that it is very difficult to even see. So obvious. And I think this is ultimately where Dogen is pointing us, and where our practice points us. How do we break through? How do we leap through this delusion of self and other? And the instruction is one of the seven factors of awakening is to investigate phenomena. So all of Dogen's writings, I think all of Kate's words, all of our words up here are simply to turn you to the matter itself. Turning toward what is right here turns out to be quite challenging. Because, as Kate said, opinion is so strong. And all of the reading and all of the talks we've heard about Zen are a problem. Because we think there is some path. We think there is some experience that we should have, or we might have, or if we work really hard, or I had it yesterday morning. But this teaching of the true nature of the world we live in cannot be an opinion of the mind. Just to say, yeah, me and the mountains are the same. I'm down with that. is not very helpful. But to go beyond some simply raising the flag of Zen and saluting the next creed. I believe, no self, no other. How do we find out for ourselves? How do we penetrate our own life, not someone else's? The wisdom of Dogen is worthless. Maybe good for him, but a problem for you and me. This wisdom that is appearing, that is available, that emerges on its own, right here, when we hear the sound of the cars going by on the wet road, is the sound on the inside or on the outside? Shunrui Suzuki says, when we breathe in, air comes into the inner world. And when we breathe out, air enters the outer world. An inner world is limitless. An outer world is limitless. So here, in between here, the inner world and outer world, of course we can say only provisionally. When you look at what it means to be a human, there is no human being without the air and the ground and the food constantly coming in. Human beings are just a stream of energy manifesting for a brief while. On fast-moving rivers, sometimes you find what are called standing waves. And there are some waves that Mike was speaking so elegantly about that the rock is right in the middle of the wave. I think we all go into those waves or find ourselves overtaken, and there we are with the rock self and rock try to negotiate. Opinion is strong. You should not be here. Rock, of course, doesn't care. And of course the water does not care either. Go here, go there, just following. But these standing waves happen after a very deep obstruction. Superficially they look like there could be something solid in there. But this standing wave is just a temporary manifestation of the energy of life. And you can steer your boat right into the standing wave, and you get a wonderful ride. Right through, right up, right over. And we are all standing waves. We are all flames burning, taking shape provisionally, and of course not taking any fixed shape. Every day different, every day mind state. What will it be now? Every day state of the body. What's hurting now? I remember thinking when I started Zen that if my knees ever stopped hurting, that would be enough for me. Many years later, now my knees don't hurt so much. Now it's my shoulder. And then it's my heart. We meet this moment, Dogen says, although mountains belong to the nation, mountains belong to the people who love them. Mountains belong to the people who love them. Mountains love their master, such as the virtuous sage or wise person who enters the mountains. So we are the mountains. We are in the mountains. We are not the mountains. We are dancing with the mountains. We are the great tide of life sweeping in and sweeping out. We are waves here briefly. How do we begin to see this, to get beyond our opinion? To say, well, just don't have an opinion, then we take a new opinion about opinions. Oh, I get it. The true opinion is to have no opinion. And we're stuck in the same thing. It is not your effort and your planning that will lead you along this way. Your personal willpower or determination is actually a puny force in the universe. Not worth very much. Of course, sometimes so necessary and useful, but there is something that is calling you that is greater than you. The mountains and waters are calling your name. They are already dancing with you. And every once in a while we catch a glimpse of this. The mountains belong to the people who love them. So my encouragement for us all is to love what we encounter. the mountain of this mind state, the mountain of my confusion. Life has already and is constantly giving itself to you in your particular position. The Dharma cares not one whit about your opinion of who you should be. This vast energy of love and aliveness that has sustained us from our first breath has no need for you to be different. So want to close with Dogen's words that we read in our sutra service. He says, the entire universe is the true human body. The entire universe is the gate of liberation. The entire universe, not 80% of it. The entire everything that comes. The entire universe is the eye of Vairochana. The entire universe is the Dharma body of the self. Are you looking for yourself? Where could you be? Where is there any place to hide at all? Thank you. So I invite you to sit comfortably. And Dharma holder Bob Waldinger will be joining with Kate and I to play toss with you. So please invite you to come forward with your insights, with your questions, with your perspective. Yeah, Kevin.
You talked about the standing wave and coming up on it, and it's, you can go straight through it or you can go over it. I don't have any experience with river waves, but I love surfing and have a lot of fun, but also sometimes no matter how much you talk about the wave, it's you can go under it, you can go through it, and sometimes it is a mountain and just slams into you and holds you under, and in looking for the fun, it feels like there's some danger of being held under. You can talk about how to.
I don't think that's ever happened to anyone. No, I really appreciate you naming that, because it can, you know, I get all excited and go through it. But also the truth is, it's wild, and it's dangerous, and not to be trifled with. And if you want to play in the big waves will play with you. Right? You know, sometimes you eat the bar and sometimes the bar eats you. And this is our practice. This is not a mistake. So if you have been, and some of you may have some little experience of this, if you have gone through a dark period in this retreat or maybe in your life at some point, this is not because your practice is not strong enough. This is because you're a human being. And it's something that deserves great respect. But riding on top of the wave or crushed under it, also not a problem. Right? Because I imagine there are times when you were surfing and you would really get pummeled. And I know you, and I know you'd paddle out again. Well, all right, let's try the next one. Or let's try tomorrow. Right? And all learning.
In the wave, grabbing on the leash and struggling for the surface, that doesn't feel like there's any control over that.
How many times have you made it to the surface when this has happened to you?
Yeah. But, Kevin, I want to just speak to something I think you're trying to touch on, which is sometimes we can't face towards something. Sometimes all we can do is turn away and say, next time I'll take it. Next time I'll take that wave. that there are moments where we simply have to let go, turn away, and that that is the very best we can do.
And I do have a lot of experience with standing waves. and they are fun. And you also are making a commitment, you know, when you head for that wave. And perhaps there's a class 4 rapid just below it. There are all kinds of dangers that can happen. And heading for that wave, you accept that things may not turn out the way that you thought. It has to be all in, right? Being willing to give ourselves up to the action that that calls to us, that is important to us. That's a factor of it too.
I'm blanking a little bit, but this is just so great. And I don't know, this head of the mountain. I don't think happen without you all. And I just really appreciate that anyone shows up and we're all here.
Yeah.
And the sincerity of you, and if I didn't talk to you and haven't even looked you in the eye, and just know you're here and you are in the water with me and on the mountain with me. And I live in this neighborhood and I really feel for people who don't live near a place like this. And I hope people can figure somehow their own sanghas along the way when they have to leave here.
Well,
you can call me if you want.
Yeah, Joanne, I think you speak this gratitude that arises and this incredible presence of Sangha that I think in some way for almost all of us, you know, because the wave does come crashing down and it's so difficult. And to be with other human beings willing to turn this direction. This is the treasure of Sangha. You express that so well. Thank you. Yeah.
I just wanted to share that the Museum of Fine Arts has an exhibit right now of Chinese drawings, and they have all of mountains in water. And along with them accompanied poems. It was at the end of my stay at the museum, but I am going to return.
Great. Yeah. Ancient images here represented in all kinds of ways. Great, thank you. Oh, yes, in the back.
Thank you for your words. What I hear in them is really a call to action. And I definitely heard it as far as Mike's words last night as well. And there's certain words that really popped out to me today. This leaping. Kate saying it many times, and David referring to it as well. And I am rather fond of the splash, the splashing that's there. And what came up to me was an image that Andy Ferguson wrote about in tracing Bodhidharma. And apparently, and I don't know, didn't check it as such, but carp aren't naturally golden. that they have been bred this way. And it comes from this story of the fish that can jump through this gate of the dam. And if it can do that, it becomes a golden dragon. Very auspicious, powerful symbol. And what I liked about it is that Ferguson went looking for this escape, and he didn't find it. And I love that aspect of it, because we're all finding it right here. We have our guides, as Joanne is pointing out, these words, our teachers, and each other. And I'm glad I don't have to leap alone. And I appreciate the splashing together. And really this back to this call of action, that this is a life call. This is not just for this sesshin. We don't walk out of here and stop being mountains. We fly out of here as golden dragons.
Nobody else is talking. I'll tell my wave story. Because it keeps coming up for me. I'm not a surfer. I'm not a kayaker. I just like the ocean. And when I used to go to Brazil, I liked to go out and swim on the beach till I got to where the waves were breaking and just bob up and down. And I was doing that once. And having fun. And the waves were getting bigger and more fun. And then I looked back and this wave, bigger than I ever imagined I would see, started coming. It was like the tail end of a tidal wave. And of course I was terrified, but also I didn't, I wanted to survive. I was certain of that. And so I knew I couldn't be too afraid. And as it got really close to me, from doing less dramatic waves, I figured my only chance was to, just as it was breaking, to dive under the crest and then turn and then swim as hard as I could and sort of ride it. And as it picked me up and was about to crest, I looked down and it was like looking down from the top of a building. You know what I'm talking about. I didn't, My friend who was watching me from the beach, who lived there for many years, said she'd never seen a wave that big off Copacabana. And so somehow this worked. and what's coming up for me is this, it's kind of like the flipping cards, this need for two strategies. Facing it, and slipping under, and then going with it, and then, and really vigorously, and then just being carried. And I don't know why, but that seems to be coming up for me in terms of our practice. We might think, yeah, you just go with the flow, but, that would not have worked. But sometimes you go against the flow. Sometimes you go with the flow vigorously. Sometimes then you abandon yourself. And I don't know if that speaks to anyone else, but it's kind of what I'm hearing in something that came to me from your talk and something I guess I'm trying to do.
Yeah, what I hear in there is that we have to participate, right? It's not just, I'll just go where the water carries me or where the wind blows, whatever. That we participate and we respond to what's going on. And we recognize that there are forces much greater than we are that are moving the parts, right? So there's a we're part of it, but we're not in control of it.
The other thing I hear kind of harkens back to what Joanne was saying, that, you know, you did go swimming with a friend. You were there with that wave by yourself, but she was there. And Joanne, what you're saying is this is dangerous, this is hugely powerful, and you can't imagine doing it alone. And that is what we are taught, that nobody can do it for us, and we cannot do it alone. And the only way I could ever imagine taking on the dangers of this work on the cushion is with all of you.
So why don't we stop here and continue the investigation?